Mets lose straight to start the season for the first time since 2005. Nobody in the ballpark. 0-5. Hitless through seven. Feels like rock bottom.
I don't regret it. I think I've been looking the worst team in probably in the whole MLB.
Francisco, Brandon said it was your idea to call the team meeting. Why did you feel like right now is the right time?
I felt like it was the right time for us to, as a group collectively, to sit down and look at each other eye to eye and hold each other accountable. And a lot of knowledge was dropped. Now we just got to put it together.
Oh, yeah. It ain't over, motherfuckers.
Here is Francisco Lindor, go-ahead man at the plate. Swinging a high fly ball, well hit right center. Harris going back. It's on the way. It is gone. Into the Braves bullpen in right center field. Francisco Lindor has an MVP moment. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Reeling back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps as fast as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Swinging a liner towards short. Hit by Lindor on one hop. Runs to second. One throws to first. Out at first. Out at first. Put it in the box. This party is headed to Philadelphia. And the New York Mets have put up a five spot here in this top half of the eighth inning.
This time Winker cranks it. It's a no-doubt shot. Upper deck, 2-0.
Swinging a drive towards the gap in right center. It's pretty deep. It's back near the wall. It's gone. It's gone. Francisco Lindor. He may have just outdone himself. He has hit a grand slam into the Phillies bullpen in right center field. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-1. Mets 4, Phillies 1 here in the sixth inning. 1-2 pitch. Swung on and missed strike 3. Put it in the books. And to the New York Mets. California, here we come. They have the New York Mets. Just traded one for another. Working so hard to make it easy. Wow, got to turn. Come on, turn this thing around right now. Hey!
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, October the 13th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. We prepare for the National League Championship Series, which starts tonight out in L.A., Mets-Dodgers. This is the official preview show of the Talking Mets podcast. Wow, it's been a couple of really good days to get away from baseball. Rest, recharge, the fun begins later tonight. I have a smorgasbord of fun content for you today as I come to you this early Sunday morning. First, if you go over to the newsletter, if you're a subscriber, the great David Mills, contributor to the Talking Mets podcast, has a short stops to get you prepared with some thoughts for the championship series. I will be doing in just a couple of hours the first ever Talking Mets Twitter spaces. I don't know how that's going to go. I don't even know what I'm doing, to tell you the truth, because Anthony's the one, Anthony Rivera, Subway Deshae, who's been doing a lot of the tech work. So I'm going to try to take the baton. Anthony's not available this morning. He will be, and we will be continuing to do the post game right after the Mets and Dodgers. So we'll be continuing to do that, so don't worry. But I thought Sunday morning, late morning, was a great opportunity to hear from you. And unfortunately, if you listen to this show, I'm not going to have a lot of different things to say, but hearing from you and hearing what your thoughts are about the broadcast, about the game, about anything will be interesting. So away you go there. And of course, if last but not least, I've been invited, and hopefully it's a friendly environment, because those Dodgers fans, and we'll get to that, can be rough. I've been invited to a Dodgers podcast to record later today. It's video. It's a YouTube podcast called The Incline. The Dodgers podcast, The Incline, has invited me on. So I'll be going into enemy territory later today, and away we go. And the National League Championship Series and everything that comes with it is off and running. So what am I going to do for you here this morning? I don't like to do these like preview shows that you get on the national pregames, whatever. You know, we got a prediction and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. And this is the key. That is the key. You're smart enough to know what the keys are for the New York Mets. I had a chance to take a little bit at the Dodgers roster. I would have loved to get a guest either about the Dodgers or maybe a Mets beat writer, but that's been tough with the way the schedule worked out and all the stuff that's going on. So hopefully, maybe at some point, maybe on a day off of the series, we can maybe get a check-in on there. We'll see how that goes. But you're going to get me today and get you some perspective. And really, this is going to set the table for what hopefully will be a successful week or so, and the Mets' final step before they get to the World Series. First, I'll say this, a couple of quick things. Get ready for this. The national media wants the Dodgers in the World Series. The national media, and even the local media, a lot of Yankees fans in that media, want a Yankees-Dodgers World Series. So that, you thought it was bad with the booth, with the Phillies, and the overt rooting for the Phillies. Buckle up. You haven't seen anything yet. You haven't seen a damn thing yet. They want badly Dodgers-Yankees. I don't even know if the networks want a Subway Series, because the last time the Mets and Yankees were in a Subway Series, it was one of the lowest rated series ever. The regionality of it, it's basically, I'll call it the SNYS series. You might as well put the games on local television. So it's going to be rough. This is a series, for whatever reason, for years, for a decade, that the media has wanted. They've wanted the Dodgers, who are the new age Yankees, and the Yankees, who are the Yankees, to come together, Yankee Stadium, Dodger Stadium, all the history. They want this. And the Mets and the Guardians are spoiling the party. So just remember that right now. It's going to annoy you, but it is what it is. You probably are smart enough to expect it. The Mets are not going to be the darlings anymore. As a matter of fact, they're now using the Mets payroll, something that was weaponized against them when they were losing a year ago, to say, well, look, they're just like the Dodgers, they're just like the Yankees. They belong here. There's no story here. There's no specialness to this team. They got a $300+ million payroll. And look, this is an advantage, because not many owners could eat 80 something, 100 million, whatever it is, you know, a third of the payroll, maybe, you know, or something like that, to jettison dead money like McCann and Scherzer and Verlander. So get ready for that. So there you go. Now, the other thing, and we talked about it at the end of Game 4, and this is on Mets fans, this is on all of us, and I'm going to be very clear on this. I don't want to hear this is house money, this is gravy, the season is a success, I don't care what happens next. You and I know that's not true. Now, after Atlanta, getting into the postseason, how they were able to come back, how important it was to move forward as an organization from the yoke, from the negative energy, pushing through a challenge in a way that a Mets team hasn't done in a long time. Yes, we could have talked about that going into Milwaukee because they weren't set up for success with the way things went down at the end of the year. But that's long gone. They've overcome those challenges. They overcame Milwaukee. They overcame Philadelphia. Now they're in the deep end of the pool. They're in the Final Four. They're a Final Four team. Want to use a college basketball reference? They're a Final Four team. At no point this year, and I don't buy into all this Fangraphs win probability and making the playoffs and all that. I don't get it. It doesn't mean anything to me because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's a nice thing, and I know that there's science or logic put into it. But you want to say, you know, throughout the year, they say the Mets have a 5% chance, a 3% chance, a 1% chance of winning the championship. Billy Epler talked about at any given moment, even the best teams in the sport have a 17% chance, if you want to use Vegas and probabilistic outcomes, of making basically being a championship team. The Mets have, they're a 1-in-4 chance of going to the World Series. Right now, they're a 1-in-4 chance of winning a championship. Soon to be, maybe, a 50-50 shot at winning a championship. When you get to that end of the pool and you don't get the job done, it hurts. There's a golden opportunity here, one that you did not expect back in February. You certainly, at this time last year when Stearns was hired and Buck was fired, didn't think you'd be talking about this. Maybe a couple of years ago in 2022, you thought you were. What's funny is, with some of the right ancillary moves on the roster that Stearns did, he took a very good 2022 Mets team and got it to the next step. Step that that team couldn't do. The step that Billy Epler couldn't do at the trade deadline that year. It's the National League Championship Series and the Mets are playing the Dodgers. Why not have some fun while you're watching the game with Underdog? Take a swing at Pick'em this baseball season on Underdog. Over a million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player stats, like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. Look, you're a Mets fan. Take the higher on Pete Alonso and the home run. Take the higher on Kodai Senga and the strikeouts. Why not? If you're a Dodgers fan or you want to make a little money and you like Shohei Ohtani, take the higher on how many home runs the Mets pitcher that day is going to give up. The possibilities are endless. Underdog is super easy to play, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up for promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, and Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use on your first Pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, to claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 19 or older in Colorado for some games, 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24-7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY at 467-369. I'm playing Underdog Fantasy this National League Championship Series playoff season. Why don't you? So this is going to hurt if the Mets can't close the deal. You know it. I know it. Let's be honest with each other. Let's not put this safety net down for ourselves because you don't want to feel the pain. You're lying to yourself. There's no way of not feeling the pain. This is either euphoria or pain. This is winning or misery. Now, good will come out of this no matter what. That we know. Well, that's been established since Atlanta. So that's done. How they move forward, that's a conversation for another day. And if they win a championship or they don't win a championship, the path forward is pretty much the same. I'll talk about that another day. Because obviously winning a championship changes things in the present in a big time way. Maybe makes the stakes higher in some ways, but ultimately how this organization conducts business going forward and how they prepare for next season, the next two or three seasons, that doesn't really change. So right now, the only thing that matters is winning. It's winning a championship. It's and the Mets have said it out loud for the first time in a while. After they beat the Phillies, they said, we want to, you know, we're trying to win a championship. Lindor talked about the seriousness of running around the bases after the Grand Slam, about how, you know, this is a step towards a larger goal. And we have not heard that talk here in a long, long, long time. I dare say maybe we haven't heard that talk since the 06 team. Maybe we haven't heard that talk since the late 80s. I'm not sure that the late 90s Mets were that declarative about wanting to win a championship. Maybe 2000. I don't remember them talking about that. This is a new world. Now it's about winning a championship. So get that around your head. The whole safety net's gone. That was thrown out the window on Wednesday night. Now on to the Dodgers. I don't want to hear anybody say, well, this is the matchup that they wanted for the Mets. You have no idea. I rewind to the spring. Big Knicks fan. You guys know that. Was very happy to meet the Pacers in the second round after the Knicks beat a very challenging and difficult Philadelphia 76ers team in the first round. Similar ways to how they beat the Phillies. And the Pacers were a horrible matchup for the Knicks. The Knicks wound up suffering devastating injuries. And they wound up losing in seven games. So I don't want to hear that this is the better matchup. Because quite honestly, just a couple of years ago, yours truly was comparing these guys to the baseball version of the 96 Bulls. And although they're not that, and they're certainly way more vulnerable than they've been in a long time, they're a team that has been the gold standard of spending and how an organization should be run since the day that the Guggenheim Group with Magic Johnson, whatever his role really is, took the team from Frank McCourt and has turned it into this National League annuity playoff team, the National League version of the Yankees, and really the gold standard of what Steve Cohen wants the Mets to become on the East Coast, and obviously adding his own stamp to it. This is not the Phillies or the Brewers. If you look just statistically, the Phillies and the Brewers from an offensive standpoint were very comparable to the Mets. They were right there as far as scoring teams. You know, maybe the Phillies had a slight advantage in starting pitching because they had guys like Wheeler and Nola, who are the top, you know, 5 to 10 pitchers in the sport over the course of the last 5 years or so. But when you look at the Mets throughout the first part of the season into the maybe August 1st on, the Mets had a top 5 pitching staff as well. So maybe there was some evenness there with it. And then both teams, I mean, the Brewers had this crazy bullpen as well as the Phillies with some of the acquisitions they made. But, you know, you were worried about that. You know that their bullpens are better than the Mets. But the Mets have Diaz. The Mets have pieces of the bullpen that can match up with anybody. And the Mets have shown to date that they could beat anybody's bullpen. I mean, they pretty much beat up one of the top closers in the game in Milwaukee. They made Estevez and the Phillies bullpen with some of those guys who had elite setup seasons. They turned them to dust. But now here's the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are not your, you know, traditional Dodgers. The Dodgers from a couple of years ago that had all that starting pitching. And they certainly still have the great offense. And they always find a way with their bullpens to find a way to get elite performances out of names. I mean, when I go up and down the Dodgers roster and I see Anthony Bonda, a guy the Mets had a few years ago who barely was able to muscle through a 3-out extra inning save in Cincinnati as a member of the Mets. All the Mets needed, it was that wild game in Cincinnati where I think they won 11-10 or something. And Bonda came in and couldn't muscle through. And now he's on the Dodgers as a key setup guy. You know, an ERA plus of 126, you know, more than a strikeout an inning, a 3.08 ERA, even opened up a couple of games for them. And, you know, maybe that'll happen again. It just, you know, you just laugh and say, how do the Dodgers do it? But the big difference that you're facing here with this Dodgers, there's actually a couple of things here. I'll give you one of the anecdotal ones. First of all, this is a very good home field advantage for the Dodgers. LA is a tough place to play. I've had a player tell me, and this is going back quite a few years, it's actually maybe the toughest ballpark to play because you got a nasty crowd out there in the outfield. I mean, the Padres faced a little bit of that. You saw some videos. I mean, these guys are no joke. You know, I mean, I used to say, you know, you got to remember, you got some of those guys out there. There might be gangbangers out there in the outfield, right? You know, they're coming to win. I'm not saying they're going to hurt anybody, but you know how it is. It gets nasty. There's a lot of drinking. It is a raucous crowd, not what you will get from the national media, because they'll focus on Hollywood and the late arrivals and everything. But this is a passionate fan base. They love the Dodgers. They want the Dodgers to win. And look, the Mets have some experience out there. Not that there's anybody really left from 2015 anymore. But when the Mets went out there and won in LA in 2015, I've said up until maybe the recent playoff run, that game five in LA was one of the more satisfying road playoff wins, maybe playoff games in Mets history. I'm not going to say it's up there with game six in Houston or game six against the Red Sox, but you take away those championship season, that championship season, and look at 99 and 2000 and 06 and some of the big wins that have happened since then in the playoffs. That was right up there. And because part of it is you were facing a future Hall of Famer in Kershaw that series. You were facing an elite top, you know, two pitcher in Greinke a couple times. That team overcame Kershaw and Greinke and the home field that the Dodgers had in a decisive game. And also Chase Utley was part of that, as you all know. And in the ninth inning against Familia in Game 5, hit a ball that some say the baseball gods blew back that looked like it was going to bring back all the bad juju from the Phillies-Mets 07 debacle. So this is, yeah, the Mets had to face Milwaukee crowd. The Mets had to face the Citizens Bank Park crowd. They finally cracked the cellophane off of a playoff baseball at Citi Field, which you'll get a couple of more games there at the very least. But going out to LA in a series that the Mets are going to have to win a couple of games out there. They are. There's just no way I can see the Mets going to LA. Well, you have to because they have the home field. But I don't think they could just get away with saying, okay, we got a three Citi Field games, win your three Citi Field games, and just win one LA game. I don't think that's enough because the Dodgers are good enough where they're going to get a game at Citi Field unlike the Phillies. The Mets cannot fall behind 2-0 and get back to Citi Field because I think that they'll inevitably come back down 3-2 and have to win two straight in LA. And I think that's asking quite a bit for any team. So I think the formula is going to be pretty much the formula anytime I feel that a series is not in the Mets' favor and the home field is seven-game series, the home field goes to the opposition. You got to split the first two. You got to find a way to win your series at home and then come back for 6 and 7 and get a game. One of them. Can they win a decisive game in LA? Yeah, I think they can. That it's not like Philadelphia and Zach Wheeler. That worried me a little bit because of the shadows, Wheeler. There was a lot there. I'm not afraid of a decisive game seven in LA. Mets survived a decisive game in Milwaukee. Not that this is the same, but they've already survived and I think are built for it. I think they would have embraced the Philadelphia scenario, but I think it would have been hard for a variety of reasons. Now, the Dodgers are not the Phillies on the pitching side. And they're going to rely a lot on bullpen, and it's a good bullpen. That part doesn't actually worry me. The Mets could get to any of their relievers. I know Trinan is having a really good year, and if you go, and I'm looking at their roster from the DS, they've got old friend Daniel Hudson, who was part of the Nats run. Michael Kopech has been great since coming over from the White Sox. Evan Phillips, that reclamation project that had great years coming out of the bullpen the last couple of years. So they have plenty of good arms, but I don't see any of those guys being any better than Hoffman and Strom and Devin Williams and some of the guys the Mets have gotten to. The Mets can get to a bullpen. Their starters, I'm not scared of Flaherty. I think he was having a career year, and you know, all of a sudden, has he found his old form? Maybe, and I know the Dodgers bring that out, but he's a guy that I feel is going to inevitably break down, and you may be, because he struggled lately, starting to see the wear and tear. Walker Buehler, still coming back from Tommy John surgery, hasn't been himself. And look, old friend Yamamoto. Mets beat him up a little bit when they saw him earlier in the year in April. got great stuff, pitched really well in the decisive game five against the Padres, but I'm not scared. I'm not scared, and he's probably going to have to take the ball at Citi Field, so he's going to be faced with the same raucous home field advantage that Nola and Ranger Suarez and some others have. I don't know if Japanese pitchers, really, because of the kind of environment they're used to, the kind of training they do, the kind of personality and discipline that's been instilled in them and that culture over in Japan, care about that. But look, it's a factor. So, and I don't think you're going to see him more than once. I have to, you know, it's interesting how they're going to use him because he pitched on Friday. So that's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That would be Wednesday. You might see him Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You might see him, you know, it might came down to where he does the turn game at game three, the pivotal game, and then he may be the game seven starter. So we'll see how that all plays out. But they don't scare me there. Where it gets dicey is on the offensive side, because this is way better than the Phillies' top three or four. Way better. And the bottom part of the lineup, guys like Muncy, Rojas, Enrique Hernandez, you know, if Chris Taylor's in there, Tommy Edman, guys like that, I think they're better. Gavin Lux, I think they're better, actually way better than what the Phillies were putting out there. I mean, let's face it, Ohtani is light years better than Schwarber. Freddie Freeman is maybe one of the best hitters in the sport, a Mets killer. And if you face him instead of Bryce Harper with runners on and nobody out, like the Bryce Harper came up against the Mets in Game 3, I have a lot more fears of Freddie Freeman. Teoscar Hernandez, very similar to Nick Castellanos, but you know, maybe a little bit more power there, so you have to watch that a little bit. Will Smith, another guy, catcher, way better than Realmuto. You're basically facing what you face with the Phillies, but better on offense. Remember, this is an offense that averaged over five runs a game, was up there with the Diamondbacks as the tops in the league. They actually hit better on the road than at home. They're actually slightly below five runs a game at home, but that could be an anomaly. Remember, Betts, and I haven't even mentioned Mookie Betts there at the top of the lineup. I mean, look at that. I mean, when you look at Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Castellanos, and then you say, okay, the Mets survived, and we're really nervous, as well as all us watching, nervous about that top of the order. You ain't seen nothing yet with Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Will Smith, Hernandez. I mean, it goes deeper, actually, than the Phillies. Once you got past number four in the Phillies lineup, you knew they were dangerous with Baum and those guys, but you took a sigh of relief and said they can navigate this. It's a matter of navigating three innings from now, the top. Well, this is different. And I know that the Dodgers stuck it to the Mets at Citi Field in May, and this is where, and you heard that inspiring montage that I found online coming in. But Mets played them tough in April when Betts was still in the lineup. I don't think they were competitive. They fell apart late in those games with the Mets bullpen getting the wheels blown off of them with Jorge Lopez and all that stuff. You know that story by now. So the Mets could compete with them, and this is a different Mets team. But this is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for the Mets starters. It's going to be a challenge certainly for the Mets bullpen. And the key is keeping this offense down while you're trying to figure out some of your own offense, because the Mets are not a team that could explode off the bat. You know, they'll put up a couple of runs. They'll go to sleep. They'll put up a run, three. I mean, they didn't hit the tar out of the Phillies. Yeah, they scored, game one, they scored six. Game two, they scored six. Game three, they scored seven. Game four, they scored four. But they did it in bunches. I mean, game one, they did it late in the eighth inning, most of the scoring. Game two, they pecked away in a few innings. What a home run here, a home run there. Game three, they were able to put that game away late with some big hits. And then game four, it was really one swing of the bat. And then even in Milwaukee, they had eight runs in game one, but they struggled to score after that. So the Mets are not a team that I think are built to win every night 10-9. You know the formula. Get through a solid start, through six innings or so, then go to the bridge to Diaz, and hopefully get no more than six outs, and then go to Diaz. So nothing's changed, and I think that's the thing. I mean, I heard Diaz talk about himself to the media and how he needs to attack hitters. I mean, well, they all need to do that. Walks are going to kill the Mets in this series, and they will kill them in a big way. And not walks to Otani and Freeman and guys like that. You may have to be careful there, depending on the situation. But if you walk the Gavin Luxes, the Rojases, the Tommy Edmonds, guys like that, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. The Andy Pajes, was it Pajes, something like that? Chris Taylor, like, you need to go after those guys. And I haven't brought up Max Muncy, who's a guy that sometimes gets overlooked, but you put him towards the middle, bottom of the order. I mean, they just have top to bottom a lineup that you are not going to be able to take a breath. They're very much like those old turn of the century Yankees teams. You're basically facing a version of what you saw the Yankees for many, many years from 2002 for about a decade. And similar to some of those Yankees teams, I think the Dodgers starting pitching is finally frayed. And the bullpen, again, you know, the fact that I'm looking at here that there might be two, according to, and let me see who put this up there, ESPN baseball reporter Alden Gonzalez feels that the Dodgers may go with not one but two bullpen games, potentially game three and game seven. I think Yamamoto maybe gets game three and game seven, and then they do a bullpen somewhere else. Maybe it's also going to depend on if they're tied, they're up, they're down. They're probably going to play that a little bit to how the series is going and what the health situation is for three guys who are their starters here, because Kershaw's not a factor anymore, that all have health issues. One coming off Tommy John, one who's had health issues for years in Flaherty, and another from Japan who's had health issues this year and probably needs to be maintained. And just like Senga needs that extra day of rest. So maybe that's why they're putting him in for game four and only one start in the series. Advantage Mets. So if you have a couple of bullpen games, I think that's advantage Mets. But that's not going to matter to the Dodgers, because the Dodgers feel they could explode for 5, 6, 7, 8 runs at a moment's notice. And they can. And if they do that consistently, or the Mets bullpen, which was very shaky against the Phillies, if, you know, that Mets bullpen walks hitters coming out, this is not going to be easy, because the Dodgers are going to put enough of a cushion between themselves where Mets magic may not be able to even overcome that. Grimace and OMG and the playoff pumpkin and all that fun stuff is not going to be able to overcome that. So that's really where the Mets need to be at their best. And this is on Jeremy Hefner. You know, Mendoza's going to have to play the bullpen well. I wonder if David Peterson, being this multi-inning Andrew Miller, I'll use him, kind of reliever to come in. Can they spot him? I mean, I know they want to keep him potentially for some longer outings, but can they spot him more than just the Senga starts? Can he come out, maybe not back-to-back days, but depending on the score, can they use him to get 6, maybe 9 outs? I mean, he could have easily got 9 outs, and I think he might have if it was a bit of a larger lead, but I know they wanted to get Diaz some work. They didn't want him to be off too long. Can he do that to de-emphasize Maton and Stanek? I mean, at this point, the Mets bullpen needs that help, because Stanek, Maton, Diaz is very shaky. I don't think you're going to bring Danny Young in to face Otani and Freeman. I mean, the only logical move would be Peterson. He's the lefty that you would feel. I mean, if you have to, in the early, late innings, like maybe 6th, 7th inning, get big outs against that part of the lineup, I think it would be Peterson. You trust Danny Young? Reed Garrett? I mean, maybe towards the bottom of the lineup. I think you really have to spot those guys. I think you have to spot those guys against Hernandez down. And even that's going to be tough. So this is not going to be like the Phillies, where you could say, look, let's just neutralize those top three, because the rest of that lineup we feel good about. The rest of that lineup is pretty good. It's probably better than what they faced. The bottom half of the Dodgers lineup is probably better than what they faced from the top half in some places. Maybe a Milwaukee year to date. Not the Phillies, but Milwaukee. And think, they used to have Trey Turner here. That's how crazy this team has been. And of course, to wrap up and to put that final bow on everything, there's all this weird anecdotal synergy that's going on, because Dodgers used to be a New York team. The Mets, at least from a championship series standpoint, owe them for 88. I mean, I think in a lot of ways they paid them back in 15 because the Dodgers were stunned by that series. They thought that team was headed for great things. They had not won a championship to date at that point. But can we even really count 2020? That's a tournament. That's a tournament. So that's another story for another day. I'm sure if you're a Dodgers fan and even the Dodgers organization, winning a regular 162-game season, winning this year, puts a stamp and validates a lot of what 2020 couldn't. Let's face it. Maybe I'll bring that up when I'm on the incline with those Dodgers fans. So this is probably going to be, and I would say this, I know Cleveland's tough. I know the Yankees are the Yankees. This might be the toughest matchup left. And I know everybody said, well, I didn't want to face San Diego. We would have been having similar conversations about the Padres. The Padres' bullpen's outstanding. See, there, I would have been concerned about the Mets being able to come back. See, here I think the Mets are going to be able to score against the Dodgers. I just don't know if they could stop the Dodgers from scoring more. You might see a couple of 8-7 games. I don't know if you're going to see 2-1, 3-1, 4-3 games. I don't know if you could expect to protect a one-run lead late. I don't know. I think it's going to be tough. And I know Freddie Freeman's hobbled, and this is Ohtani's first trip to the deep end of the pool, but they have so much more there. So much more there. And they're a well-managed team. They're a well-run organization. Any kind of advantage with analytics or preparation that the Mets think they have, the Dodgers probably are finding ways to bridge the gap. You know the Dodgers want this bad. The Dodgers want to validate this. And look, you know, the Mets are another, in their eyes, speed bump on the way to what's rightfully theirs, which is a championship. And then you have the whole national media. National media is going to take offense to the Mets or the Guardians ruining what they believe is a fait accompli, Yankees-Dodgers. You're already hearing the national media complain about the playoff setup because the Phillies didn't make it to the next round. The whole point of having wild card is to have this randomness, is to create a tournament. And by the way, and this is something I'll make this point over and over again, and this really goes back to what I talked about, and maybe I'll wrap up here. Get it through your head. The Mets since June 1st have been one of the best teams in baseball. They are as good as the Yankees, the Guardians, the Dodgers, the Padres, who are no longer part of it, the Phillies, who they close a 17-game gap down to a manageable, and if even, you know, late, I know they played 700 baseball down the stretch, they could have maybe squeezed them even more and made that division interesting if they had a better August. Mets belong here. Don't buy into any of this. There's annoyances by the Mets being here, and from a narrative standpoint, the playoff pumpkin, the grimace, the little engine that could fits the networks better, but they belong. What they're doing is not just magic. It's a lot of grit, it's a lot of guts, it's a lot of clutch, it's a lot of things that sometimes come and go when you can't measure, but they've been winning one-run games all year. They've been doing a lot of this all year. They're a team that has a top five starting pitching staff since August 1st. They're a team that has shown they could beat bullpens. They're a team that can score maybe, you know, not every inning, maybe not put pressure every inning, but when they scored, they could score in bunches. They could get 5+ runs a game. So they've proven all that. Now they have to prove it against who they see as, what, maybe their muse? Is that the right way to put it? Maybe the Dodgers are their muse? And how ironic would it be for the rest of this postseason? The Mets slay the demon in Atlanta. They're starting to push the anvil, the yoke of 86, 06, whatever you want to call it away. They break through against their muse, their team that they want to be, the Dodgers of the East Coast, and then go on and face the Yankees in a Subway Series. Get ahead of ourselves. But wow, there's a lot of grudge matches here. 88 grudge match. I want to be you and put you into the back seat grudge match with the Dodgers. Then who knows? And look, if the Mets advance, they're either going to be facing their long-term crosstown rival or they're going to be facing a city, a Midwestern city that has been starving for a World Series since World War II. think 86 is bad. Think about the people who have been sitting around since they came back from Germany. God forbid. And waiting, you know, Cleveland fans waiting for a championship. Think about that. You were talking about rebuilding after World War II the last time the Indians, they were the Indians back then, Guardians, Cleveland baseball team won a championship. So that's where we're at. Not going to make predictions. I think the Mets are going to have to find a way with their pitching staff to hold the Dodgers down. I don't think you're going to expect dominant outings. I think you're going to have to expect outings where they navigate base runners. They have to, you know, potentially the starters may not be able to go that extra 3 to 6 outs because they're going to be stressful pitches one through the first couple of times through the lineup, through the fifth inning. The bullpen is going to have to step up. It's going to have to be better. Is Peterson part of that? And last thing, I mean, as far as Jeff McNeil, that's going to bring a lot. I mean, remember, McNeil was one of the Mets' best hitters from the All-Star break on. What he has left, how much rust he can get off in just one Arizona Fall League game and be thrust into the deep end of the playoff pool, that remains to be seen. That's asking a lot for anybody. If anybody could do it with the kind of hitter that he is, Jeff McNeil could do it. I've always said McNeil's the kind of guy you could wake up on Christmas Day in the middle of a snowstorm, ask him to go to the batting cage, and he could give you line drives cold. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but I believe out of everybody on the roster, he could do that. That's going to be big. I still think the Mets should carry another arm. I don't think they should just keep Acuna for defense and running. I don't know if there's going to be enough value in that. There is value in that. I think the Mets might need that arm. Remember, one less pitcher. Now, I know you have the starters you could go to in these games. McGill is a guy who could go longer. Peterson is a guy who could go longer. But one less arm, you get yourself into a 15-inning game, you get yourself in some trouble. There's no ghost runner. I think with this offense, with how they are, I think it's going to be hard to see games go long. But you never know. I mean, it's the postseason. It's old school baseball where somebody has to break through. Whether it be a home run, a bloop and a blast, whatever. That kind of thing. So that's that. I hope you enjoyed this preview edition of the Mets and the Dodgers. LA Dreaming. They're dreaming the Mets of a championship. They're dreaming of a World Series. It starts in a city that is known to make dreams and break dreams when it comes to the entertainment industry. So what an appropriate place for this journey to continue. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silla at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silla at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the game today. I will be on Twitter with his spaces at 10:30 for the preview, for the pregame. I will be on Twitter with Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, for the postgame after game one. Enjoy the game tonight. Rest up. Enjoy your Sunday. I'll see you later tonight.